the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. In each episode of the show, we shine a spotlight on the women who are making strides and changing lives. Hello, and welcome to the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. We are here today with acclaimed DC broadcaster Jan Fox, whose 4 Emmy Awards attest to her stellar 30-year career in local network news. But don't ask her where she went to journalism school. The only woman role model on TV when Jan was a kid was I Love Lucy, so we're going to definitely have to talk to Jan about that. Jan likes to say she came from a poor house in Shelbyville, Indiana, and made it all the way to the White House and Hollywood, interviewing many celebrities and presidents. It's a life she never could have imagined. So we are thrilled that you are here today on the Truly Amazing Women Show. Let's get started.
Hello, hello. This is my honor, honestly.
So why do you say that you're living a life that you never could have imagined?
Well, let me ask you to imagine a little kid with socks that don't match, Jonna Drake's hand-me-down dress in an old house with broken windows, with a lot of weeds in the backyard, an abusive mom, and not always having food that matched. If we had macaroni, there was no cheese, or if we had tuna, there was no mayonnaise, and sometimes there was hunger. So imagine that kid getting to do what I've done and getting to be where I've been and meet who I've met. It's just, I could have never dreamed it. So I always say that some big PR agent in the sky laid some plan and I just walked it. My daddy used to say, opportunity knocks and walks Janet Fox. And there's some truth to that. I just looked for an opening, stuck my foot in the door, and if it worked, I kept going in. If I didn't, I pulled it out and ran. So that's honestly how I've lived. I just feel incredibly blessed, lucky. I wake up every morning with a grateful heart.
That is excellent. And let me just say, we are here at Circa DuPont Circle in Washington, D.C., so if you hear some background noise, that is why. But we are so excited to talk to Jan about that career. So tell us, you won 3 Emmys at WUSA Today, TV9 in D.C., for Best Investigative Reporting, Best Feature Story, and the coveted Station Community Service Emmy for your work on child car seat checks. That is so impressive. Tell us about these accomplishments and how you made your way to WUSA TV 9.
It was pretty simple. I was a kindergarten teacher, then a college professor. Then I, by luck, ended up being a little reporter on a big show in Boston, and then the host left, and I took the seat for 13 weeks while they went on a national search, and I lasted for 5 years, big national search. And then I had a chance to be an anchor in Portland, Maine. I had never done that a day in my life. So while I'm there, I meet the guy. The guy gets a job in D.C. and says, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm putting all of your stuff on my moving van. So I came to D.C. looking for a job. And I watched TV every night for 3 nights and decided that the place with the deepest stories, the best reporting, was Channel 9. And so I really wanted that job. But when I went to the other stations, they were beautifully appointed and orderly, and Channel 9 was in an old building, looked like a rat's nest, blinds falling down. Rumor has it Mike Buchanan mooned me in the background. And I just wanted to be there. And luckily for me, I got the job. I was told I could have the job. But you know how that happens? They say you're going to get a contract. And you know what happens? Nothing. So 2 weeks go by, nothing, 2.5. And I'm walking down a street in Portland, Maine. And I saw a sign in my peripheral vision that said, we'll ship anywhere. So I just turned like a 45-degree angle, walked in a little door, bought 2 lobsters, stuck them in a box, and said, I would hate to leave these bad boys behind, but for you I would. I want this job. And the next day I got the call saying the contract was coming. So I could have never planned doing something like that. It just sort of fell in my vision. And so when I got there, there were so many opportunities. And I was like a pig in a candy store, what goes in a candy store? It was just amazing. And I thought I would love politics and that there must be lots of politics to go around. But I went down to the White House and then I went to the Capitol Hill for a hearing on some medicine. And I said, what happens next? And they said, well, next year we'll have another hearing. And I said, oh no, send me to the streets. And I just became a street reporter because the action was there day in and day out. And then I had a news director who suffered a little bit of depression. And I went to him and said, out of the blue, not knowing why I said this, if there's anything I can do to help you around here, let me know. And I meant a little committee of some sort or something. And he called me in 2 weeks later and said, I need you to be my consumer reporter. And I was devastated because I thought you had to be a lawyer. I didn't know anything about it. I didn't want to do legal stuff. And it just took off. So for 8 years, we got to do car seat checks that saved kids' lives. We put a plumber out of business. We got people their money back. We investigated everything under the sun. And it just, I know it made a difference in people's lives. It just let me sleep well every night. So that's how I ended up with some of those awards. And I had great producers.
Well, tell us about some of those exciting stories. The consumer is absolutely, consumer reporting stuff is really fascinating. But tell us about some of the sensational stuff, meeting presidents and working in Hollywood.
Okay. You know, when you're a talk show host, as I was in Boston, and even in some cases here in D.C., when there's a movie opening, all the talk show hosts get to come to that movie opening in what they call a junket. And we get to walk into a fancy hotel room where the star is sitting with all makeup and lots of cameras and editors around her. And we get to interview that celebrity. They then give us a copy of that interview, and they give us a trailer of the movies. And we're supposed to come home and do an honest review after we've been wined and dined for 3 days, right? So if you ask me my favorite, I mean, I almost always answer Dolly Parton. And if I'm speaking to a group, I have to beg forgiveness for being ever so slightly politically incorrect. But what's the question most people want to ask Dolly Parton right away? Yeah. I can't tell you where she's pointing. This is radio, not TV.
Shock and awe.
Yeah, shock and awe, exactly. So all the talk show hosts said they were going to ask that question. Are they real? And I side the door and asked every one of them as they came out, did she answer? Nope. Did she answer you? Nope. Did she? Nope. And so I decide that I'm going to carve out a question I know she will answer, or that I'll trick her into answering or something. So I say, is there ever a time you want to just be Dolly, Rebecca, Parton, Dean, and take the wigs off, flip off those fingernails, let the air out of those things if you can, and just be Dolly, Rebecca, Dean? And she said, ha ha, honey, I'm always Dolly Parton, ever that goes. But I like painting and powder, and this is a good barn. If you paint it up so it looks pretty, it's pretty, pretty. But if you take all the paint and powder off, it's a dang good barn. So I have no idea if they're real. What a great soundbite out of her. And she was just so delightful and so authentic and everyone except looking at her. So sometimes when I'm speaking about speaking, I say to the group that I assume that you're going to come to me in your authentic state, and I will put up the picture of Parton. And everybody starts laughing because it does not look authentic. But when you ask questions about her soul and her purpose and her homeland and what she's done for the people where she came, you can't help but love her soul. So that's one. My favorite president was Jimmy Carter. And I'll tell you why. He came to Benning Road in D.C. and he built 10 little for Habitat for Humanity. And everybody told us that we could not Tim or Rosalyn from working because they just wanted to work. I kid you not, every day he walked to my camera and he gave me great sound bites, and so did she. And a little boy got his own house and got his own room for the first time ever, and he got to plant out front. So I said, Byron, when this bush blooms, you can all come back and do a story about it again. And so he called me, Miss Fox, you don't remember me, but she's a bloomin'. Shot the story. You don't remember me, but I'm graduating from sixth grade. Will you come to my school? I sure will. You don't remember me, but I got baptized at the Thankful Baptist Church. Just a whole long list. And we stayed in touch. And Byron wanted to work at Channel 9, so he came as intern. Then he got a job as an associate. And Byron was an assistant director of Channel 9. So I just feel like Jimmy Carter gave that boy, that family, a life they would have never had. He also taught me that at no matter what age, work till you sweat. Just work till you sweat. It feels good. So I work a lot.
That's excellent. And that's the perfect segue to this question. You're not at Channel 9 anymore. Tell us about what you're doing now.
I went to the guys at China and I said, look,
I'm a ripe old number, and I'd like to go, and I'd like you to give me a little severance package and a cake that doesn't come from the grocery store. And so I got that. And I didn't know what I was really going to do, but a friend of mine offered me a job as a little customer service person in a golf company. Golf. I never worked so hard my whole life because I had to learn Excel spreadsheets. Almost killed me. People kept asking me to speak and asking me to coach. And I thought that would end when I got off TV, but it didn't. And so I said to my husband, I'm getting asked to do these things and they're paying me and I have these little bits of income. I think I need to start a business. And he said, sure, go for it. 62 years old, that was the ripe number. And I went to an expensive brander and I learned how to corral my stories. And I learned some things about marketing myself. But the whole day, I didn't come out with a name for the company. So I went and complained about that. And he said, well, Foxy, why don't you just call it Fox Talks? Because you sure as heck do. So I say it's Fox Talks because I talk and I teach people to talk better. And I just have a string of clients. I honestly don't know where they come from. They come by referral and by word of mouth or by fluke, I just don't know. And each one is in a different state in his or her speaking either career or speaking path. And so I have systems that I use. I can't tell you where in the process or what exact thing I did, but they all go out feeling like they can speak, and they all go out with a plan for their talks, and I just see their skin grow. My friend said, why do you love this so much? And I said, I see people grow, and I see them try things they've never tried. And she kept going, you know the why thing, why? And I finally said, I see their skin strut. And she said, well, then put out a sign that says taxidermist. So I love being a taxidermist. The speaking part for me is a teacher, and so I viewed the classroom as just a bigger, as a way to reach a lot of little kids. I viewed television as just a bigger classroom, and when you're sitting on a stage to a lot of people about speaking with full-blown impact or sharpening their speakability to have more impact or speak better, sell more, mine. If I'm talking about that to them, I just feel like it a message that's deeper than just the speaking. And I love it.
One great tip that our listeners can take away today to speak better in front of large groups of people.
Well, I hate to use an old cliche, but just do it. I believe if you look deeply inside yourself, the message. And in this day and age, you may be the only one who can deliver it. So you're obligated, I believe, obligated to get out of myself, not worry about whether I have on the clothes or whether or not I'm going to stumble over a word, but I'm obligated to get back, I guess, in exchange for all I've been given. So the first thing, and then there's one little tiny practical tip. Scared or timid about speaking because we stand in our speaker box, our 2-foot square box. I'm the speaker, you're not, you're all looking at me, I'm worried about what I'm going to say, and I can't miss box. And if you think back to every time since maybe junior high when you were separated from your group or when you had to stand alone or you were put out by yours for one reason or another or you felt left out, that's nerve me. That's scary making. And so I say, just take us to your right or to your left, step out of that speaker box. Forget that you're the big spurt that they're gonna sap you for or judge you. Just share what you know. Just be one of the group and share what you know. They even pay you for it and they want it. So just give it to them like you're giving it to the neighbor over the back fence.
That's beautiful. beautiful, that authentic approach to it where you're one of the team. I think that is the takeaway from this idea, this lesson, this interview. So tell us a story that's on your website about an elephant in Boston Square Garden. What was that all about?
People always say that they're nervous, that's why they can't speak. And or they don't want to because they're afraid of making a mistake or something. And I understand their fear, but not for the reason you think. My daddy was a storefront preacher and preached on street corners to say my little memory verses from the time I could speak. And so speaking has never been of mine. When I was at the ABC station in Boston, the circus came, and I was asked to walk out with the ringmaster leading an elephant and blow the whistle and say, "Welcome to the circus," on behalf of ABC TV. Not an ounce of fear. 16,000 people. I was so excited. I loved every minute of it. In fact, I tried to drag it out, so I was there a second or two longer. But if you give me an Excel spreadsheet, or if you tell me I have to balance my check, I have palpable fear. I'm the classic math football from the 50s and 60s. And so I know what that fear is like. So whatever you're really good at, like I'm really good at a whistle and leading an elephant, there's something that you're really good at. You find a way to just bring a little piece of that to your speaking. There's a relaxation that comes from that. So my way of getting around Excel spreads is paying my husband to do the formulas and speaking about what a great job I did.
Making it work. I love that idea. So tell us, can you name a few of the famous folk coached, or is that top secret?
I have coached some D.C. locally famous people, some Boston locally famous people, some in the golf world famous people. And it's not so much that I don't want to tell who they are, but they came for the reason that most people come to me, is that they had a fear about it or that they couldn't sort out their mail. And so I don't like to put them in that light. But I went into one, just one. He'll kill me. It's the executive director of the International Consortium of Investigative Journalists, a very powerful position. And someone gave him, out of the blue, a hard drive. Hard drive had on it 30 years of emails and records how the British Isles were a tax haven. Now there were some big names on that drive. And so he didn't know for sure what he had, and he, when you get that kind of material, you don't want to share it with anybody. It was huge, and it affected lots of countries. And so he pulled together 150 journalists from around the world. They wrote this, worked on it for a year and a half. It blew up last April 25th. All around the world, they reported their stories on the newspapers and on television, on the internet. It was huge. Some governments have toppled. Some very famous bankers in England are in trouble. Imelda Marcos's daughter had back her Van Gogh paintings, and the son, the Korean whatever, had to give back some money. So it was an amazing story, but he was afraid to tell it. Afraid to tell it. And afraid of his memory in being able to tell it. And he was sort of afraid of the organization of it. And so we worked together, and he was asked to do a TEDx talk. Honestly wondered in myself, am I up to this challenge? Because he was really worried. And what I did was I helped him build a PowerPoint of nothing but this, so that any moment he forgot something or didn't know he was going, all he had to do was click. Finish the sentence and click. He did a phenomenal job. And not only did he do a phenomenal job, but the audience got it, got the magnitude of this. And so They clapped long after he left the stage, but backstage, clapping in the curator's arms, and had no idea how long they clapped. But I stood up for him, and so other people as well. So it's things like that that just make me just like there's such a need for convincing people that if they open their mouths, the impact could be heard in a big way.
Oh, absolutely. And it's good to know that if someone comes to you, that you're not going to out them. It's a good thing.
He's close to being outed, so
that's okay. We can hunt him down on the internet. So it sounds like you are just such a busy lady. You've also, in addition to your speaking, you conduct training programs, and you've done it at Verizon, the Defense Logistics Agency, the CIA, Anthem, and the list goes on. And now you're helping the DC Bar and some PR firms, groups, IT companies. It's just amazing. So what are your plans for the future? What do you plan to grow business?
Okay, the truth comes out. I'm 67 years old. So when you ask me what my five-year plan is, I think I might have said this as we were prepping. I just want to avoid the rocking chair. I'm having a blast. Have a big business plan. I have little ones. But I want to take it as it comes. I want to do some new things to my website. I want to offer new programs. I want to offer some things that they can buy online so it can reach a bigger market. But I couldn't dream, so how am I supposed to dream the rest? I'm just living a new dream, and it's a reinvention. I reinvented myself from being a school teacher, college professor, from a college professor to a TV talk show host, from a talk show host to an anchor, which I'd never, to working in a top 10 market, which I'd never done. And so now here's just another reinvention. So remember when I said opportunity knocks? I've got my toe in a door. I'm beginning to see what's behind it, and I'm going for the ride. Now, I hope no serious business coaches hear that and say, what is she thinking? But that's the honest truth, and I'm loving it.
Well, I think that's the secret to being a truly amazing, right? You just keep going forward, because there's a lot of women, men, children, all kinds of people out there don't seize the moment, and they don't think either that they can or they don't have the chutzpah or the conviction to keep moving forward. What do you think sets some people apart from others? Because it's a conscious choice to go forward. What is it for you that makes you keep going?
I think when you grow up like I did, this is going to sound kind of hokey, but there are kind of three little R's here. You learn to be resilient, because if your mother is coming at you for a strike and you don't know for why or where it's coming from, I learned to be vigilant. I just learned to have my eyes open and bounce back quickly. As if I gave any sign of weakness, I got more. So there's just an inner resilience that I've learned to trust. The other is we didn't have, so I took over my brother's paper route. I worked in my Uncle Gene's old filthy, dirty shoe repair, such as when the kids from the nice side of town came in and there I was in a filthy apron. But hey, I had money in my pocket. And so anything I've ever had came from working or knowing somebody who helped me do something, trusting that. So I call that kind of a resourcefulness of some sort. And then the resolve, it's just, you see it, all you have to do is tell me I can't do something. And there have been things I haven't been able to do, but if you tell me I can't do it, I'm going to resolve to try, or I'm going to resolve a piece of it if I think somebody can make use of what I'm trying. I was talking to a group the other day, and I said, you don't look outside yourself to overcome your obstacles. You already have overcome 5 zillion, if we count all of them up in this room. A cranky husband, a husband who drinks too much, a wife who spends much, a kid who looks goth. I mean, we could list all of our problems in this room, but look, we've overcome those, and we've come through some dark places. So what makes us but can't dig deep to come through the next time? So that's what I use. I wish I could tell you it's much more sophisticated, but it isn't.
I don't think it gets more sophisticated than that. That's perfect. It's the three from Jan Fox. One last question for you. What is your biggest tip for people to take away from as a speaker if you want to overcome your fears and really engage an audience? Just one they can take away in addition to the beautiful information you've given us today.
I think there's any mind shift. If you put your hand in front of your face and look at your palm and you say, I'm really scared, I'm standing up here all by myself, and if you move it just a couple of inches, you can see beyond it. And if you do what I call the big embrace, if you embrace that audience and embrace the opportunity instead of hide behind this palm, it's just a tiny little mind shift. So when I work with people in the room, even if it's a big training session, I have them try that. I have them move out of that speaker box I mentioned earlier. I have them switch a gear. So it's just tiny moves. I call them tweaks, the power of tweaks. Micro to maximize your impact. And I also say it can maximize your potential. So if you're fearful, a tiny little move gets you started, and then you know what? The rest of the tweaks just unveil themselves one after the other.
Wow. Here's the power of building your confidence. I love it. I'm so enjoying being here with you, Jan Fox. Thank you for sharing your insights on the Incandescent Radio Network, the Truly Amazing Women Show. Please check Jan's website, foxtalks.com. She is a gorgeous, amazing woman. We should all look this good at 67. God love her. You are listening to the Incandescent Network, the voice of entrepreneurs, online at www.incandescentradio.com. Thank you for spending your time with us. We look forward to talking to you soon. All right.
That's it for today's episode of the Truly Amazing Women Show on the Incandescent Radio Network, the voice of entrepreneurs. If you're a truly amazing woman or know someone who is, don't hesitate to contact us. Simply log on to www.trulyamazingwomen.com and fill out the proposal form. We've profiled more than 250 women on the site who fit the bill of being truly amazing, and we look forward to honoring more. Who will be our next truly amazing woman? Tune in next week for a new episode on www.incandescentradio.com. Here's to your incredible, indelible success.